Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday version of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of the now three morning show hosts, and this morning we have the lucky treat to talk with one of our one of my favorite people that come on the Tuesday Morning Show, Rich Del Carlo. We're going to be talking birds of winter. Hi, Rich.
Good morning.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
You bet. Before we start talking all things birds, I'd like to just give a short weather report, because this week the weather is going to be changing a little bit. Today, everybody can count on sunny weather, which has been going on for a while, a high around 33, no wind, so this is a great day to get out. Tonight, it's going to be a little frosty, low of 17. Wednesday, more of the same, sunny again, high of 36 and calm wind, and then Wednesday night, same thing. However, Thursday, it's going to start to change. So for those of you that love snow on the ground, in town and up on the mountain, we've got a little hope coming our way. Thursday is going to be partly sunny during the day with a high near 38 and light wind, but in the night we're starting to have chances of snow. And so here it's coming. Thursday night, chance of snow. Friday, there's a good chance of snow. We're looking at 50 to 70% chances. Saturday, snow. Saturday night, snow. Sunday, snow, etc. So on to a snowy end of the week, on into Monday and Tuesday, too. So some of you will be happy about that. Personally, I'm happy with no snow in town as long as there's snow up on the top. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, you know, and people have been enjoying the ice skating on the lake and the sloughs, so that's really cool.
Yeah, and on Sand Creek, I noticed lots of little skate blades. It made me want to get out and try it, although I'm not sure where my skates are these days. The chances of skating here in town are pretty low. I mean, it happens just every few years, it feels like.
Yeah, but take advantage of it, because it'll change.
Yes, it's going to change soon, but the cold nights are making it hopefully a little bit safe for skating. Well, Rich, I have to start by talking about why I invited you today a little bit last notice. First of all, we had a cancellation, and so we had a guest that wasn't going to make it, which happens from time to time. But secondly, I was noticing that I've been feeding birds in town on Elm Street, and generally they're very happy, lots of the winter birds, but I had noticed last week, first one little pine siskin dead by my feeder, then a couple of days ago, another one, and it reminded me of something that happened a few years ago, which is why I called you, so why don't you take it up from there?
Yeah, and you know, your kind of documentation of that is the first that I've heard of it, but it's always good to be aware of that. And that's actually a disease that primarily affects the the pine siskins, because they flock up pretty heavy and feed like intensely together. And it's a salmonella related disease. And the telltale factors of it are, the birds look puffed up. They're really lethargic. They just, you know, they don't fly away when you move to the feeder, and they're just kind of sitting there all huddled up.
Yeah, like they're chilly or something.
Yeah,
it's really kind of sad.
So obviously they're sick, and the disease is spread through saliva and droppings. So it's really important always, but certainly when you kind of start seeing these, symptoms, to keep the feeders clean. So, and it's especially a little more prevalent when you have platform feeders, to where the birds are actually foraging in a pile of seeds and just doing what they do. And so it is important to always keep those feeders clean, and using a bleach solution, a light bleach solution, thoroughly soak the feeder in the bleach solution, like 1 to 9, or you have the disease, you can 1 to 4, and just keep those feeders clean. Don't allow, you know, don't put a ton of seeds in the feeder at one time. Let the birds eat all the seed, and then
go ahead and still clean it.
Yeah. But, and then if you do end up having, like in your case, having that, those diseased birds, you have to quit feeding for a couple weeks, allow them to kind of go somewhere else, you know.
Yeah, not be together where they might be spreading, so they can not continue spreading it.
Right, and you know all these birds are fairly, especially in this kind of weather where it's pretty mild and they can totally survive. They, you know, they're opportunistic, so they're coming in and feeding where there's lots of food. So not feeding for a couple weeks is not going to be a detriment to the birds. And obviously, of course, you have chickadees and nuthatches and maybe even a jay or a, you know, woodpeckers coming into the feeder. But primarily the disease is the pine siskins are way more susceptible to that.
Yeah, like the little finchy birds, but pine siskins for sure.
Yeah, and the house finches, they can get a disease that shows up in their eyes. So it looks like they just have a really watery eye, and you know, it's kind of, when you see it, it's kind of wet around the eye. But I think it's the pine siskins that really suffer the most from this type of thing.
Okay, well, listeners, if you are having pine siskins at your feeder, keep an eye and keep those feeders clean. And I imagine that means your water clean and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, obviously, if you have the way to keep it unfrozen.
Yes, like a heated one.
Right.
All right. Well, something important to think about, because we don't want to be killing the birds that we want to be feeding. But let's move on. The last time I talked with you, Rich, was for short talk in December.
Right.
And it was just before the Audubon bird count. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, we've had a pretty snowless winter down here and pretty mild. So it was really a lovely day. I think we did it on the 14th or 15th, I believe. So there was open water. There wasn't a lot of ice. It was easy to get around. And, you know, there were a lot of birds. There was nothing out of the ordinary, but we did end up seeing 72 species, which is pretty good.
That seems good.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that, that the count shows and it's fun seeing are the big numbers of ducks that come in, widgeon, scop, a lot of diving ducks, golden eyes, that show up. And so it's it's fun to see them, and also really kind of important to get a count and estimate of what they're doing.
Yes, and tell us about the numbers that you counted. How were everything I'd like to hear about, but how did the duck populations do?
The duck population seemed like they were doing pretty good this year. There were a lot more redheads than we've been seeing in the past. I hadn't really heard anything of you know, a kind of decline of redheads, but it seemed like there were more redheads and nothing really out of the ordinary.
Okay.
I guess one thing that was that we have been experiencing the last few years is a lack of like Bohemian waxwings and red poles, which are birds that nest in the boreal forests in Canada and Alaska, and then make their way here in the winter to feed on berries and seeds. The red poles love birch seeds, you know, just I think it's has a lot to do with feed, you know, and weather. So they haven't been actually pushed into this. They haven't had to leave the areas where they, if they don't have to fly as far, then they won't. So
yeah, they're getting enough to eat in their more northern spots.
Right. Right.
Okay. Right. Well, that leads me to a question. Well, let's finish Audubon, but then I've got a question about other birds coming south from the north. But how about songbirds? Did that seem about normal?
Yeah. I mean, chickadees, there's always chickadees around, nuthatches, and typically, you know, like the birds in the winter, they do tend to flock up a little bit more. So there's little groups of birds moving around all the time, and it's just kind of the right place, the right time, and being able to see them. So sometimes you see chickadees, you go, wow, there weren't any chickadees, but they were, you know. I mean, it's not like we don't have chickadees around. There's a lot of chickadees. They seem to be doing really well.
Good.
And we have, you know, we have three species of chickadees, black cap, chestnut back, and mountain. And the mountain, they are you know, they nest in the higher elevations, and so you see them in the summer in the higher elevations, and then they kind of some do come down and come to feeders and even in town in the winter.
Yeah, it's fun to see all three chickadees if you have the opportunity. That's neat. And what about our big birds? I know there are normally quite a few eagles spotted. How about other birds of prey?
Red-tailed hawks. We always see red-tailed hawks, merlins. You know, just about any month of the year, you can see a merlin in Sandpoint. And sometimes there's a kestrel. Always a possibility to see a pygmy owl. They're a little more what's called diurnal during the winter, where they're out during the daytime actually hunting. So, and I believe we saw a pygmy owl in the Christmas bird count.
Oh, neat!
And yeah, they're always fun.
That's fun. I had a mutual friend of ours, Bonnie. Thank you for the picture, Bonnie. Sent me a picture yesterday of a pygmy owl on the top of like a kind of a dead branch or something. It was a neat picture.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they actually will hang out by the feeders and pick off a you know, I actually saw one year a pygmy owl grabbed a mourning dove off of my feeder.
Wow!
And it was in the winter, and it just came back for days and worked on that dove. So that was I don't mind them, you know, giving them a little food in the winter.
There you go. We can't save every bird. It's the wild kingdom.
Yeah, we were actually, it was a few weeks ago at Celeste's house. We saw a merlin hanging around, and it actually came in and grabbed a chickadee and flew onto a pole and proceeded to pluck it and eat it.
There you go. Well, another bird that is pretty voracious is the shrike. Did you run into any of them?
Yes. We did see a couple. And, you know, if people aren't familiar with a shrike, it's called the butcher bird. And it's basically, you know, a bird the size of a robin that eats mice and potentially chickadees. And it doesn't have talons. So it uses a hawthorn spike or a barbed wire fence to kind of hang its prey on, and so it is able to eat it.
Yeah.
And they actually fly down, come down from the north as well.
It's a little weird when you think about it, but it works for that bird.
Totally.
To have things sitting around on branches, on sharp branches. Yeah,
and you would see them. There aren't many around, but they're, you know, potentially a good place to see them would be out Sunnyside Road, sitting on the potentially a wire or a top of a tree. They like more open spaces.
Rich, I wanted to ask you, what do you like about birding in winter? I mean, there's some definite negatives. It's chilly. There aren't as many birds around. What do you consider fun?
I think that there's always the possibility of, especially on the lake, of a rare loon showing up, a yellow-billed loon or a red-throated loon, Arctic loon. There's been a few sightings of great gray owls this winter. There was one that was up at Pine Street Woods for a few days that I actually saw. And then I've had other people contact me and say they'd seen a great gray owl. So there's always that potential.
Well, that's where I was going next, and there's a word for those birds coming south, and it's not eruption, it's irruption,
yes,
right,
with an yeah,
I. It's
right,
very
right, right.
Slight difference in the word. And I understand from some friends in Minnesota that's been happening, and there was even a sighting of a boreal owl in Minnesota, but lots of great grays, et cetera. So we're having a bit of that here then this winter.
Well, on some level, I don't know if that's... We certainly don't have the the red poles and the Bohemian waxwings. And talking to friends from the Kootenai Wildlife Refuge, usually there's a lot of rough-leg hawks there, and they've seen one or so. So not many of those around either. Mm-hmm. So, those eruptions can be regional. You know, like just because Minnesota's having one. Typically, we don't, and vice versa.
Well, it makes sense because it's related to climate and food supply and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so interesting. Well, we'll keep our eyes open for any interesting any interesting birds that would come down from the north, but it doesn't sound like we've got a great chance of that. Well, all right, so before we go to a song break, I wanted to ask you this. When you are out birding in the winter, where do you go looking? Where are the birds going to be?
Well, feeders, for one thing.
Right.
And then, you know, one place I'd like to go is out on the Pack River Flats, at the Drift Yard. And, you know, the birds get pushed, especially the waterfowl, get pushed around a lot in the winter because of hunting pressure. But if the hunters haven't been out there for a day or so, then there's lots of ducks, like at the mouth of Denton Slough. Denton Slough is always good. There's a potential for red-breasted mergansers, some different types of gulls. So.
Yeah, I hear you're enjoying looking at the waterfowl in the winter, and that brings me to another question, which is you about gear, because you just aren't going to run out there with your naked eye, right? It's not exactly...
For the waterfowl, you need a scope. Definitely binoculars, but you need a scope. That's helpful.
Yeah, I've tried with both, with a decent pair of binoculars, but boy, a scope makes such a big difference.
Yes.
So one needs to either get that or find a friend with a scope.
Exactly.
Right? And we do have friends. We've all got some friends with scopes, so think about them. But it's a fun way to spend some time out outdoors and working on identifying waterfowl. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, another place is... you know, there's usually a big raft of ducks off of the Long Bridge. So sometimes they're in closer near Conde del Sol. So there's always, when the lake drops, there's always a beach there on that west side of the bridge that you can walk out and observe birds from there as well. And then, of course, you know, there's always eagles around. One afternoon I was out at the Drift Yard and saw 70 great blue herons.
Wow.
Just sitting on the shore. So,
yeah.
So that's.
And those guys, do they winter over here? They're staying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And belted kingfishers.
Right.
They're around.
Yeah. Birds that in other climates would leave are here in the winter. Mm-hmm. That's fun. Well, that's really neat. Okay. So we've talked about some good places for people to think about looking for birds around feeders on the waterfront. And, you know, basically, those are probably your best couple of spots.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then just to walk in the woods, there's always golden crown kinglets and chickadees.
I saw one yesterday, by the way.
Golden crown kinglet?
Yes, I did.
Brown creepers and nuthatches. And, you know, now the owls are starting to... set up territory. So you can hear a great horned owl, you can hear a barred owl, pygmy owls can be calling, and even saw-whets. So
cool. That's fun.
And of course, the eagles are starting to nest now.
Right. Something that I do that maybe isn't the most efficient thing, but at this time of the year, I like to crack one of my bedroom windows open a little bit, because you really will hear the owls if they're in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
It's totally.
Coyotes too, but the owls are what I'm listening for.
Right.
Well, okay. Some good tips for where to look for birds if you want to get out and incorporate that into your daily schedule when you're enjoying the outdoors here. Well, Rich, I think we'll take a song break and then come back and talk about some of the nuts and bolts of being good stewards to our birds.
Perfect.
All righty. Here comes one from Emmylou Harris called... Well, what a sweet song. Emmylou Harris and My Songbird. if you're just joining us, this is KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, and I'm one of the Tuesday morning show hosts. We're talking with Rich DelCarlo this morning about birds, birds of winter, what's going on with birds. It's such a darn source of all things, storehouse of knowledge of all things birds. It's just great to connect with you and have a good talk, Rich.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You bet. Well, we've been talking about seeking out birds and birding, but now after the song break, we're going to move on to talking about care of birds, habitat, etc. So let's go there now, Rich. What do we do in the winter that's different from summer? Is there more feeding? What should we be thinking about?
Well, there's potentially more feeding. I think what is probably used a lot in the winter are suet feeders. When you put out a couple of suet feeders, and you can buy suet in little blocks, or you can actually make it. You can even put out pieces of fat, beef fat, or make tallow or something like that. But birds really like that, especially, and the woodpeckers especially. pileated, hairy, downy, flickers, and all the birds will eat some suet.
Pretty high energy.
Yeah.
Right. That's mm-hmm. good. So suet is good. And in terms of the best bird seeds, do you have some favorites?
I just use black oil sunflower seeds.
They're pretty universal, aren't they?
Yeah.
Birds love them.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, when we began the interview this morning, we were talking about just hygiene around the feeder, but let's touch on that again in case listeners are just joining us. It's pretty key.
It is pretty key. And the type of feeder you use has some implications, like the platform feeders where you can get big numbers of birds coming in and they're all pecking, walking around the feed and moving around. That's a little more problematic. Tube feeders, they don't allow the droppings to get in there, but birds can still get their saliva in there. One thing I've noticed with the tube feeders is that it seems like a lot of seeds spill out, and so you end up wasting a lot. But we did talk about sanitation, but one thing that's been nice about this year is that birds have been able to forage on the ground as well, with the snow on the lower elevations. So that I think that's helped the birds this winter.
Yeah, they can find some of their own food.
Yeah,
that's
so. Good. And then they're still picking up seeds, and of course there's droppings on the ground, but it's not as kind of intensive concentration of potential disease.
Right. My feeders that I've now taken in are tube feeders, so that may be the problem there for me. They're kind of probably getting their saliva and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'll be sure to take care of that as soon as I leave here this morning.
And I think that providing kind of shelter for birds, because if you notice, they'll come in and they'll feed. Chickadees will, of course, they'll come and eat a seed and leave. And here's a really interesting fact that I just learned. Chickadees actually, in the winter, they have the ability to increase their brain size by 30%. So that they can actually remember where they cache seeds.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So they're able to almost, when it's really cold, go into a kind of a torpor, almost like a little hibernation every day, and then are able to increase their brain size based on probably day length and things in the fall.
Wow.
To be able to remember where they have
put all those cached seeds.
Yeah.
Right. Are we hurting our chickadee IQs by having all that feeder food out for them?
Well,
hope not.
Yeah, right. But I mean, that's just the thing about birds. I mean, every day there's just new information about how amazing
our birds.
All these creatures are.
It's amazing what we're learning. Placement of feeders is kind of important. Near cover, you just talked about, but I think away from windows, if we can do it.
Yes. Yeah. I've seen, you know, they sell feeders that actually like can be placed on a windowsill. And, you know, that may not be too bad because when the birds hit the windows, they're actually moving at speed, you know, because they can't discern the exterior from the window because of the reflection in the window. So they're moving through, and like a feeder right out the window, they're coming in slow and they're just targeting the feeder. So I'm not sure.
Right. That might be good.
You know, it might be.
Better than something like 20 or 30 feet away where they would fly off and maybe hit a window.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point. So something to think about.
And then, you know, kind of a related, going back to the disease things, having feeders, not like four or five feeders concentrated in one area in different parts of the yard is probably good.
Yeah, to keep the birds somewhat dispersed.
Yeah, and even if, you know, just a brush pile in the yard, you know, if you didn't get to that burn pile, that's actually a really good place for birds to spend the night, find shelter when there's predators, and just even just kind of cuddle in there and stay warm.
Yeah, can help with your feeding and birding over the winter.
Yeah, and a lot of birds, will congregate together to stay warm. Even in a cavity or a, bird box even. I know that we've got, juncos that kind of spend the night in the firewood pile. And so any place where they can, you know, just, kind of a natural place for them to hunker down.
Get out of the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a good plan. Well, I would also like to ask about like feeding during the various times of the year. I've run into people that have told me that they feel like feeding is basically unnecessary for a lot of birds and that it just makes them dependent on humans. Now, what's your opinion?
I think there's probably some truth to that. But there's also... They are all, like I said, they're also very opportunistic. And if you quit feeding, you're not going to have a mass die-off because there's other food around.
Yeah, they'll find it.
So they are very opportunistic. I think if you were to stop, like if we had if you had birds come into your feeder and all of a sudden we had got way below zero or something like that, quitting then would be a little tougher because they don't have a necessary immediate food source picked out, but
yeah. What about summertime feeding versus winter feeding?
It's probably not necessary to feed in the summer because there's more accessibility to other food, and then even just having trees that in your yard that fruit at different times, especially like now, you know, where there's mountain ash berries on the trees. And typically that's when we see the Bohemian waxwings would be coming around town. You'd see a flock of birds in these mountain ash trees, and nothing right now is eating those berries.
I noticed the same. They're just loaded with berries and nothing's eating them.
Yeah. Although a couple weeks ago in town, I was just driving around and saw a big flock of robins. And that was just one day I saw them. They must have moved on. But there are the potential for robins to show up as well.
And you'll remember the first Christmas bird count we ever did. We had like, I don't know if it was an eruption or just a bunch of them, but remember the varied, what were they?
Varied thrushes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and very pretty.
And everywhere we went, we saw varied thrushes. And people at different... in different areas that were doing bird counts had kind of the same situation. So that was a pretty unique
Year.
Yeah.
A lot of fruit. They, of course, they're eating fruit. They're, I suppose they're in the robin family or roughly.
Yeah, they're a thrush. So, yeah.
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 So they were really beautiful. Okay. So there's the thought of having natural food out in your own landscape, which is great for wildlife. And I like that. And there are other foods that they like, too, besides just mountain ash. I mean, I think crab apples are kind of a good one.
Yep.
And what other? What are some other suggestions?
Service berries, hawthorn, even apples that are left on the tree. Birds will come and eat those in the winter.
Yeah, and then, well, of course, just a lot of native habitat is good for cover and bugs and all kinds of stuff for them.
Right.
So that's great. All right, so we've talked about the when and the why of feeding and et cetera, feeding and good sanitation. And then during the song break, Rich, you and I were talking about how do like-minded birders find each other? And we were kind of trying to brainstorm that a bit. And you had a couple of good ideas.
There is a, Sandpoint does not have a actual Audubon chapter. Coeur d'Alene does, and it's a pretty pretty active, and there's a lot of people involved with that, and that's through Audubon. There's, you know, people can always call me, and with, people always call me like, what's, you know, send me a picture on my phone. What is this bird? Whatever. So people can call me with, you know, if they are looking to for a place to go or somebody to hook up with.
Well, you're going to have to give out your number over the air then.
Oh, I've done that before.
All right.
And then there's, you know, just kind of as a almost a personal resource, but I actually use this when I go anywhere in the world birding, and it's called eBird, and it's a way to you know, kind of investigate and see where people are seeing birds, and anywhere in the world, and then also it's a way to document your own sightings.
Yeah, a nice way to keep track of what you've seen. I suppose you can get your life list together on eBird.
Yes.
Nice. Well, another thought that you had was possibly during the birding classes, there are occasional birding tours up at Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge.
There are.
Summertime.
Yeah, and those are, I don't know, they have a few every year, and you can contact them. Sometime I usually do a bird walk at Pine Street Woods sometime in late May, early June.
Okay, so keep an eye on the schedule for those guys.
Yep, and you know if there is a you know, kind of interest, you know, we can always do a group hike out to Trot Creek or something like that. It's always fun to when the warblers are back and the vireos and everything.
Yeah,
it's along fun the water. To get out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Well, we might have to pin you down for that then and post that. We'll have to either post it here at KRFY or maybe through Pine Street Woods, one way or the other. But we'll get it out there. Yeah. That would be very fun. I would attend. The other way of meeting fellow birders from around Sandpoint, of course, is the Christmas bird count. But listeners, you'll have to wait a while for that one.
Yeah, but and that is always open to everybody, and that is a, you know, that's a kind of a good way to network and meet different people and kind of get an idea who's out there.
That's right. Now, do you have any favorite bird identification books, or do you just stick with eBird, or what do you use?
I use bird books. And I use Merlin.
Tell us about Merlin for those that don't know it.
Merlin is actually a free app that is generated and run by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology from Cornell University. And it is a really kind of good way to help identify birds. certainly birds in North America, there's a sound ID that you can access. Just, you know, click the button on your phone and it records the sound and tells you what it is. It's not 100% accurate, but it is, it's pretty effective. And I was just, I got a kind of a report through eBird of statistics and my own statistics, and then like just trends in statistics nationally and even globally. And Merlin use has increased by like 70-80% in the last couple of years. So people are really kind of educating themselves through the use of that app.
I use it, and I have several friends that use it, and we really enjoy it. You don't always 100% get what you get what you're hoping to get, but it's very helpful.
Yeah, you have to be a little discerning and have a little bit of knowledge, being able to question that. But they're improving it all the time, and it's really a nice resource.
I think so too. I think that's a great recommendation.
And then just a field guide. There's Peterson Guide, there's a National Geographic Guide, Sibley, and it's always good to have a bird book along because of the Merlin just shows photos, and then the field guides show drawings, and typically of lots of different plumages, and it's good to have all those resources and be able to kind of read the description of some identifying marks.
I agree. And, knowing sort of their regions that they're going to be right. living in, where you might right. expect to find them right. can be very helpful.
Exactly. Yes.
That helps narrow things down. Well, that's really good. Those are great starting points for beginning birders that might want to get going even this winter. Audubon through Coeur d'Alene, could try the Kootenai Refuge. We could call Rich, but he's going to still have to give out his number. Rich, what's your phone number?
208-290-1405.
Okay, you heard it.
Text would be good.
Texting is good. All righty. And let's just move on to, I'm going to tag on to the eBird application, because you said it allows you to identify birds from all over the world, and that leads us into something that's going to be happening with you pretty soon, which is travel more or less based on your love of birding. Let's talk about that.
That is true. Everywhere I go, I kind of do a little bit of an investigation and education about what I'm potentially see. And so heading to the British Virgin Islands for a week of sailing with some friends, and looking forward to seeing the pearl-eyed thrasher.
Oh, the pearl-eyed thrasher.
Exactly. Anywhere I go, there's a potential for these, exciting birds that nobody else would think were too exciting.
But then after that,
I'm going to Costa Rica, of course, so have a little opportunity to see some birds.
And you'll have to tell me, because you've gone to Costa Rica a number of times. I know it's a country that's very rich in birds. We've talked about it in relationship to hummingbirds, but it's a really diverse and bird-rich country. Talk about that just for a moment.
Well, they have over 800 species of birds, and there's many, many birds that we have here in our own yards that winter in Costa Rica and Central America and South America. And then they have their own, regional birds and birds that even migrate from South America a little bit into the north. So that whole area is incredibly diverse. Costa Rica has done a really good job in reforesting areas. There was a push a while ago to, deforest, and then they realized what they had. And the amazing thing about just about any country down there, that even if people don't have binoculars or knowledge, they always have an awareness of the nature around them, and that's really cool.
That does sound cool. Now, are there certain birds that you've not seen yet that you're going to be really looking for when you're there this year?
Well, there's a few of the ant birds and ant thrushes that I'm looking forward to seeing, maybe.
All right. That
and you hopefully, haven't hopefully, seen hopefully yet. Hopefully get to see the rufous-vented ground cuckoo again.
Oh, the Rufus. Say that name again. The Rufus.
Rufous-vented ground cuckoo.
Wow. It sounds like a big bird. Is it a large bird?
It's a pretty big bird. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Neat. Well, that is the fun
bird. Yeah, so yeah. And in fact, this year I get to actually spend some time down there with some other bird nerdy friends. So that's fun.
So you'll have some focus on birding. Yeah. And we've talked about this on the song break. And Rich, you haven't really committed to this, but I learned from a friend that there is pickleball in Costa Rica, but you've told me you're not bringing your pickleball paddle or shoes.
That is true.
That's no good. I think you need to pack it.
I'm bringing my flip-flops and my binoculars, really. So that's...
There you go. Well, let's see. This has been just a great talk about what to be thinking about here if you're here in Sandpoint for the winter, and knowing what's the right way to go with the birds that we're doing our best to care for here, and what to look for. So really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah. Is there anything we've missed that you'd like to add?
I don't think so.
Nope. Not for me either. Well, it's been a great talk. Listeners, I'd like to thank Rich Del Carlo, local birding expert, for joining us here this morning on KRFY. And he did give out his number if you want to learn more. You want to give it one more time, Rich?
208-290-1405.
Okay, so if you want to reach him directly and talk birds or ideas about where one might want to go for birding, Rich would be the guy to go to. All right, we're going to go to a song break and then come back with some local news, topics of what's happening around town. Here comes Marshall Tucker Band with Fly Like an Eagle.